The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. Welcome back to the second hour of the 9 till noon show on this Tuesday morning. It is the 2nd of January. This is the first 9 till noon show of 2024. And a happy new year to every single one of you. I think we can keep on saying happy new year until about the end of today. And after that, maybe it starts to taper off a bit. A few comments before we go any further. And don't forget, by the way, it's a Tuesday, which means we will have our Community Garda information slot a little bit later on. Garda Grainne Doherty is going to be joining us in studio very shortly. But before we do anything else, let's take a few of your comments. Caller says, I passed my test a few months ago. I was stopped at a checkpoint in the Illestrin area a few days ago. One of my end plates had fallen at the back of the car. I got 2 points. You could still clearly see the fallen down plate through the back window, so says a caller. Caller says, if this government brings in any more driving laws to this country, we may park the vehicles up. Now, in fairness, I don't think Susan Gray of Park is calling for a new law. What she is calling for is a law which was promised 10 years ago to be enacted. And the law that a person who does not show up for their test can automatically get their provisional licence renewed over and over again. I mean, there's an argument that says that's not a law that's going to compromise the ordinary driver on the road. That's a law that's very targeted to a very, very specific situation. We heard a letter earlier on from a caller in South Donegal who said, who had painful spine and lumbar pain. A caller says, I suffer the same pain 24/7. The doctor put me on a tablet called Targum. It's oxycodone. It's just about takes the edge off the pain. There's also a sacroiliac belt, and I hope I've pronounced that correctly, a sacroiliac belt that can help by taking the pressure off the spine. That can be got in most chemists. And something like that, perhaps it may help. It certainly is not going to be a solution. And don't forget, anything like that is never a replacement for the medicines you're given by your doctor. It's also it's a complement or an accompaniment. It certainly isn't a replacement. But this sacroiliac belt can take some of the pressure off the spine. If that helps, by all means, try that. The 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. You can contact us, you can text us or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. You can call us on 074 91 25000. You can contact us via social media. We're at Highland Radio on X. We're Highland Hub on Facebook. Comments at highlandradio.com for our email. Now, you can look at, there's an interesting story actually on the Donegal Democrat. Anyone who was at Masses over the Christmas period will have heard the message from Bishop Alan McGuckian in the Diocese of Raphoe. Our world needs hope, and it's indeed covered on the Donegal Democrat this morning. Bishop McGuckian says towns and villages in Donegal are awash with drugs and the mica crisis remains a huge issue in the county. In his Christmas message to parishioners across the Raphoe Diocese, Bishop McGuckian said those in trouble could take heart from the Christmas story. We need hope, the Bishop said. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It is a Tuesday morning. It's just approaching 10:15, which means it's time for this.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 9126025.
It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Delighted to welcome into studio Garda Grainne Doherty. Grainne, good morning.
Good morning, Donal.
And a happy new year to you and to all associated with An Garda Síochána.
And same to yourselves here at Highland Radio. And actually, that's my starting point here, so we'll get straight into it. We just want to wish yourself, Caroline, Greg, all your colleagues here at Highland Radio, and of course your listeners, a very happy new year from us all at An Garda Síochána Donegal. We're hoping 2024 will be a good year for everybody. We're hoping in particular that it will be a safe year on our roads and that people will make a big effort this year to take the road safety message on board. You know, too many lives are being lost, too many life-altering injuries are being sustained on the roads every year, and a certain percentage of these certainly could be prevented. So we were last on air on December 19th because of the Christmas break. So between December 20th and today, the 2nd of January, there have been 12 drink driving related arrests within the Donegal division, 7 arrests for drug driving offences, and 6 of these arrests occurred between New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, 1 drug driving and 5 drink driving arrests. So that was overnight, New Year's Eve into New Year's Day across the division. And of course, a number of other road traffic offences were also detected and have been dealt with over the past number of weeks. And the main offence seems to be that of speeding, number of tickets given out for speeding. So it is the time of year to make resolutions. We're all making resolutions, and I find myself at it every year. You know, I'm going to exercise more and cut down the sweets, and it never lasts till about the 3rd of January every year. But at least it's the good intention that counts, I think. But we're asking people, and it's probably not one that would come to mind usually, you know, road safety. It's usually slimming, giving up smoking, giving up drinking, whatever the case is. We are asking people this year, we all have bad habits when it comes to road safety, you know. It's time to be honest with ourselves, realise the mistakes that we do make in the road. Sometimes, you know, people may find that they are in the habit, the odd time, of picking up the phone, if the phone bleeps, looking at the phone. Maybe they're going too hard in the accelerator. We're asking everybody this year, please, when it comes to road safety, make a big effort this year to be more responsible. So we're asking everybody to slow down, because speed is a killer. Belt up, wear your seatbelt, ensure your passengers are also wearing theirs. Never ever drive while under the influence of alcohol and or drugs. Don't hold, use a mobile phone while driving. Ensure that your vehicle is in a roadworthy condition before travelling. You know, check the tyres, check the lights before you set out in any journey. Ensure that you're highly visible to motorists while out walking or cycling. And I think we do have a certain number of the high-vis vests still in the storeroom in Letterkenny. So if anybody wishes to call in, we'll happily give them one of those. So we're just hoping this year is a happy and healthy year for you all. We want to thank the public for their support in 2023. And we have had the public support in 2023, as we have every year. We're very grateful for that. And we're looking forward to serving our communities once again in 2024.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, to a number of incidents for which Gardaí would appreciate the help of the public out there. And we're starting in Killybegs.
Yeah, so Gardaí and Ballyshannon. They're appealing for witnesses to an assault. This occurred at Main Street, Killybegs, in the early hours of Saturday, the 23rd of December, between in and around 3:15 a.m. and 3:40 a.m. So a man is believed to have been assaulted by another man at that location. The injured man had to go to hospital. He was hospitalised to receive medical treatment for the injuries he sustained. We're appealing to anybody who may have witnessed this incident to make contact with us. We're also appealing, as always, to anybody who may have travelled in or around that area on that date and had a dash cam to make that footage available to us. Gardaí and Ballyshannon can be contacted on 071 985 8530 in relation to this incident.
Going to Ardra now, and a number of burglaries over the Christmas period in Glengesh Court there.
Yeah, these two burglaries occurred in an apartment block at Glengesh Court in Ardra. So these burglaries happened between Saturday the 23rd of December and Wednesday the 27th of December. So these apartments were vacant at the time and were reported after the fact. A window was smashed and one of these apartments' entry was then gained. Then when the entry was gained to the building, a number of doors were forced within the building and a door was forced into a second apartment. Nothing of real value was stolen during the course of these incidents, thankfully, but we're appealing to anybody who may have observed any suspicious activity in that area between those dates to make contact with Gardaí and Ballyshannon on 071 985 8530. And the Garda confidential line, as with all of our incidents, can be contacted on 1800 666 111.
This is one of those incidents, presumably, where people that lived in those apartments had gone elsewhere for the Christmas break. And maybe it's a pointer to the need for things like timers on lights and just taking those precautions to try and, you know, negate the fact that people passing by can see that a place is empty.
Of course, yeah. And as always, you know, don't post, and I'm not pointing the finger at anybody involved in any of these incidents, the injured parties. But as always, you know, and I think we all have a tendency at times to, we want to let people know if we're going away, and we post to social media, you know, we let people know, we make them aware of the fact that we're not going to be there. And as well as that, if there was anybody else within that apartment block that perhaps is away at the moment, you know, or anybody in that area that's away for a number of days over the Christmas period, we would ask them just to check on their properties as well.
To Letterkenny now, and a collision that took place on Saturday of last week.
Yes, this happened on the Remelton Road in Letterkenny on Saturday the 30th of December, shortly after 9:40 p.m. So a collision occurred between two cars. One of these cars then immediately left the scene. The car in question has been described as being a dark saloon-style car, possibly an Audi. We're seeking dash cam footage from anybody who travelled in that area, the Remelton Road, and as far as the Polestar roundabout or within that general area. If you had a dash cam, you were in the area, that footage could be invaluable to us. So nobody was injured as a result of that collision, thankfully. Mm-hmm. We're just asking anybody who witnessed the collision or who has the dash cam footage that we were requesting to contact Gardaí and Letterkenny on 9167 100.
to an incident now that will certainly have required, at the very least, a van, and that's something that happened on the 17th of December in Castlefin.
Of course, yeah. So this happened on Arney Road, Claughfin, Castlefin, quite close to the Claddy Bridge there, you know, the border. Mm-hmm. So two industrial-sized wheelie bins were stolen on Sunday the 17th of December between approximately 2:30 p.m. and 5 p.m. We're asking anybody who travelled in that area between those times, if they've seen any sort of activity, suspicious activity, to contact us in Letterkenny on 9167100. We're particularly interested in any sightings or dash cam footage of a grey or silver-coloured transit van that's believed to have been in the area on that date.
To Inishowen now, and an incident in Muff on Wednesday of last week.
Yeah, so this theft occurred in Muff Village on the morning of Wednesday the 27th of December. A vehicle had been parked overnight in a car park at Main Street, Muff. And in around 11 a.m. on that date, the 27th of December, the front and the rear number plates were removed and stolen from this car. We're appealing to anybody in this instance who travelled between Muff Village in the direction of Quigley's Point between 10:30 a.m. and 11:30 a.m. who had a dash cam to make that footage available to us. And any relevant information in relation to this incident may be forwarded to Gardaí in Bunkrana on 932-0540.
Yeah, and concerning that, I mean, you know, someone could be planning to use number plates for nefarious purposes at some point into the future. So obviously that's one that's important that they get detected and recovered.
Of course, yeah. That's a matter that has to be taken into consideration also in relation to incidents such as these. Yeah.
To Remelton now, and an incident last Friday.
Now, so this happened at the Back Lane Upper in Remelton. This happened on Friday the 29th of December between the times of 5:30 p.m. and 6 p.m. And I think that's something we've all done ourselves. You know, a resident in that area that just arrived home, may have been away for a few days. They were in the process of unpacking their car, just taking their Christmas shopping and other items into the house from their car. And a bag was stolen from the car during that time period. So this bag contained Christmas gifts and sportswear. Among the stolen items was a pearl necklace, pearl earrings, two pairs of ladies' trainers, Asics and Brooks, and a pair of custom orthotics. So we're appealing to anybody who may have observed any activity in that area that stood out or caused concern between that short time frame. So that's between 5:30 and 6 p.m. on the 29th of December. We're asking those people to contact Gardaí in Milford on 91-530-60. And again, as always, if anybody was in that area with a dash cam between those times, that would be invaluable to us. And should anybody come across these sorts of items for sale, also please alert Gardaí immediately.
And those orthotics, I mean, you know, they're custom, which means, number one, they'll have been expensive, but number two, they're very important for someone who's in the middle of treatment, that they have access to them. And, you know, the fact that they're custom made, you know, you want that to get returned as quickly as possible so the person can get the full benefit from them.
Yeah.
Distraction burglaries. It's an issue we've discussed on the programme before, and there's been something of an increase right across the country that you're concerned about.
Well, yeah, do you know, I was chatting to Sergeant Paul Wallace, our crime prevention officer, yesterday in relation to this, and we did notice that there was a number of distraction burglaries have occurred now, not in Donegal, thankfully, but further down the country. But I mean, criminals are highly mobile. You know, these sorts of incidents can occur anywhere in the country. So we just want to remind people in relation to these types of burglaries, and maybe just to remind them to chat to the elderly members, the more vulnerable members of their family, neighbours, friends, just in relation to them, to remind them that these incidents are occurring and what steps to take to prevent them. So distraction burglars, they come to your door, they pretend to be someone they're not, just to gain access to your home and to steal your money. That's as simple as it is. They often work in pairs. One of these people may distract you at the front door while the other enters your home via rear window, rear door, while you're kept talking on the doorstep. And unfortunately, older people are frequently the main targets of this sort of crime. So in some of these recent incidents, bogus callers have impersonated Gardaí. They've called, they said they're calling in relation to a spate, maybe of recent burglaries, and that they want to speak to the person and advise them in relation to home security. In other recent incidents, they have said that they are officials who are there to inspect pension cards. So look, they can come up with any sort of reason really for being there, false reasons. So in all cases, we're advising people, especially people who live alone, the elderly, the vulnerable, please be wary of strangers calling to your home. Don't open your door to anybody unless you've checked who they are and what they want. Be 100% satisfied as to their identity before you open your door. Use your chain limiter. Those chains are great on the door. You know, you can open the door a certain amount, see who's there, close the door again. It adds a wee bit of extra security to your home. Check ID where appropriate. You know, if these people are saying, I'm from whatever agency, I'm a guard, I'm an official of any sort, ask for their ID, ask them to pass it in through the letterbox, you know, so you can have a look at it. Ensure your back door is locked if you do answer a call at the front door, because regardless of whether or not you've fully opened your door or you've opened your door, you could be talking to this person at the front door, through the door, through a closed window, and while they're distracting you, their accomplice could have, you know, gone round the rear of the house. Please make sure your back door is locked if you're attending the front door. Don't keep large amounts of cash at your home. That applies to everybody, you know. Don't keep large amounts of cash in your home. Contact Gardaí immediately if you're suspicious about a caller. Take note of their clothing, appearance, vehicle registration number and the direction of travel if possible. We understand in the heat of the moment it's very hard to remember to do these things, but it's great. You know, if we can get a description of the person, even what type of accent they had, even a small part of the registration number of their car and they turned right when they left my drive. You know, these pieces of information to us are invaluable. So we're asking everybody again, please check in on your neighbours, check in on elderly neighbours, friends, family members. Talk to them about all types of scams, this scam, but all types of scams also, just and advise them in relation to them.
There was a time when you would have said to people, you know, if someone is claiming to be from the ESB, ring the ESB. If they're claiming to be from Irish Water, ring Irish Water. One of the problems you have now is that more and more there isn't a local telephone number to contact. And in fact, I've noticed that a lot of utilities and companies don't even publish telephone numbers at all anymore. They want you to do everything online. So from that point of view, it's getting more difficult to sort of just contact a local office and verify over the phone, as we might have advised people to do in the past. So the advice is, if you're unsure, keep that door closed. And if you're very concerned, give the local Garda station a buzz.
Yeah, and as you say, look, no more than myself, yourself, if you're ringing now to get any sort of service, really, it's a machine you get pressed.
Yeah, it is. It's getting more and more difficult to say. And we used to be able to say, ring the ESB and double check, but you can't really do that anymore. So, but the main message is, you know, be careful, be cautious, and err on the side of caution.
Yeah, well, if these people are on your doorstep, you're unsure as to their identity, you're just not satisfied that they are who they say they are, or you're unsure, contact a neighbour or a family member, keep them outside, keep your door locked, don't let them in, ring the Garda station, say I have a caller at my home, I'm unsure as to their identity. The guards will happily go out, they'll speak to that person, they'll check their ID, you know, so there are all sorts of ways, but the number one thing is, do not, you know, don't permit entry to your home if you're not sure, if you're not 100% sure as to who this person is.
And I suppose, bottom line, if it does transpire that they're genuine, better to be a bit embarrassed than to be the victim of a crime.
Exactly. And I mean, look at, even if it's a genuine guard member, I can only speak from our point of view, our perspective. If we call to somebody's door, they are elderly, vulnerable. If they don't allow entry to the house, they look, I'm sorry, I'm not sure. I want to ring the Garda station, or I want to ring my sister or brother. There's no offence taken. Yep. If you're genuine, I or any of my colleagues certainly would not mind waiting. We don't mind waiting until you've verified who we are, you know. So don't be embarrassed. It's your safety. That's, you know, first and foremost, that's your priority. Don't let embarrassment get in the way. Keep the door shut if you're not sure who they are.
Yeah. Finally, the Garda recruitment competition is opening again as of the 15th, and the age limits have changed.
It has, yeah. So this competition, the recruitment competition, opens to applications for those up to 50 years of age. From the 15th of January 2024. So should anybody have any queries in relation to this campaign or in relation to a career within Garda Síochána, they can visit www.garda.ie, where there's a range of information to be found there, and frequently asked questions also. Applications to join may be made at www.publicjobs.ie. And we've also, maybe in recent times, we've had people call to the station. There's absolutely no problem with that either. And sometimes it's the best way, you know, you get it straight from the horse's mouth, so to say. But, you know, people call the station sometimes and say, I'm interested in a career within Garda Síochána. And we maybe then put them in touch with one of our trainee Gardaí that we have in the station, who have been in Templemore in recent times. And they arrange to meet with them, and they talk to them about the application process, about how they found Templemore, how they're finding the training. And sometimes that can be of great benefit also, you know, and there's no problem. So if anybody wishes to do that, they're more than welcome to call to any of the 24-hour stations, really, would be the best stations to call to and ask, can you speak to a student trainee Garda?
Yeah. And garda.ie or publicjobs.ie are the two websites that you will need. Grainne, thank you very much indeed. It's been great speaking to you, and we look forward to doing it again. And there'll be another community information slot, of course, on the 9 till noon show on Tuesday of next week. But for now, Grainne, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Donald.
Okay, that was Garda Grainne Doherty there on our Community Garda slot.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 912-6025.
This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. If you were reading your papers or watching your TV over the past couple of days, you'll have noticed that between Christmas and New Year saw the annual release of state papers. They're published after 30 years in Ireland. They're published after 20 years in England, and they offer interesting facts and insights. And the great thing now is, you know, when you get to, certainly when you're my age, you well remember the incidents that the archives are about when they're released 20 or 30 years later. I well remember what was happening 30 years ago because 30 years ago I was here on Highland Radio reporting about them. And my guest on Zoom remembers them well. Maybe not as well as me, but he certainly remembers most of them, I suspect. Historian Dr. Joe Kelly, as always, it's an absolute pleasure. Joe, good morning.
Maijin waia gut, Donal, agus the Loch Deish, Jack. Happy New Year to yourself and all in Highland Radio.
Good morning, Joe, and Happy New Year back to yourself as well. I'm sure, Joe, from the point of view of a historian, this must be a time of year you really look forward to be able to get your teeth into documents and read up on stories that you, by and large, either remember or are very familiar with.
I'm from a generation where this process was very much happening. It was the embryonic stage, and Donal, we're of an age where you know, I teach children, they don't understand the troubles. And if you remember, Bertie Hearn said, you know, the up the ra sing song of the Irish soccer, and he said, look, there was nothing heroic about up the ra, and he was right. As our former Taoiseach, we remember the troubles, we remember the death, the carnage, irrespective of the politics of it and which side one was on. It was a horrible, horrific, terrible stain on our history, and you know, that you were growing through that, and to think that now we have relative peace in the sense that people aren't being killed. I grew up listening to the radio every morning as a young child, hearing about death. That's what I heard every morning, and you understand that.
Oh, totally.
That's alien to most young people, say under the age of 40. They don't understand that. And these documents, particularly with the British documents released after 30 years, reveal a terrible lot about Northern Ireland and the embryonic stage of the peace process and how they were trying to bed it down, the relationship between Bertie Ahern and Tony Blair, and then previously Albert Reynolds. So the Irish papers are 30 years, the British papers are 20 years. And what's really interesting about them this time, Donal, is there's more and more documents released, because back, say, before that, it wasn't emails. Now there's emails, there's media, newspapers, cuttings. It was originally newspaper cuttings and an odd memo here and there, but there's a vast, I think it's over 2,500 pieces of information alone that had been kept under state archives up until the end of 2023. So very insightful into what was happening, for example, in 1993 and 2003. And then there's some papers for, we don't understand why, anomalies really, they turn up out of sync with the but they released them, they should have been released maybe earlier.
Yeah.
And they're very fascinating. They're fascinating equally as much. So I don't know where you want to start.
Yeah. The fact that there is that 10-year difference, that it's 20 years in the UK, it's 30 years here. Is it a matter of you see a paper released in the UK with regards to their perspective on something that happened in Northern Ireland, and then you have to wait 10 years to see what the corresponding attitude and the corresponding response on this side was?
What they're trying to do is to bring the Northern Ireland ones down to 20 years. The government are trying to come to equal terms with the six counties, which is understandable. But I personally think 30 years is a healthy thing, because we have to realise that, and particularly we talked about the North, it's still very raw. And there's a long way to go yet. And the last thing you want is papers being released that could be inflammatory or could lead to more hurt, if that makes sense. But at the same time, the truth is the truth, and we have to deal with it. And maybe that's where we're at, development and the progress of Ireland, and particularly in relation to the six counties.
So some of the interesting stuff that's been coming up include indications that whereas we hailed the visit of Queen Elizabeth to Ireland in 2011 and those moments with President McAleese and all that went with it at that time, I mean, had the Queen had her way, that might have happened a lot earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I had a great admiration, I have to say this, for Queen Elizabeth. I can't say that of the present incumbent, but I can certainly say Queen Elizabeth seemed to be a very honourable, genuine, sincere woman. And one couldn't say anything other than that about her. She seemed to have a genuine interest in the relationship between Ireland and England, and that we were neighbours, and that there were hurts done, and she recognised that. And it appears from the state papers that she came here in 2011, as you point out correctly, to visit Mary Calice, but that she'd asked previously, as far back as 1998, July 1998, could she come to Ireland? She obviously was concerned and wanting to build better relationships. But at the time, Bertie Ahern was Taoiseach, and he said, look, not this side of a general election, number one. And number two, the Irish diplomat in London, Dahi O'Kelly, had expressed to the British counterpart, look, we're in the early stages of the peace process, and we wouldn't want anything to unhinge that. And so it was put, so to speak, on the merbadda, on the long finger. And it didn't happen to 2011. But that ties in a wee bit with the Omagh bombing. There were 29 people, including a pregnant woman, were sadly killed. You know, the biggest tragedy of our troubles in Northern Ireland. In 1998, there was a month's mind anniversary service to be held in Omagh. And the Irish President, Mary McAleese, and Irish Taoiseach were going to be present there. And this caused a little bit of a conflict in the diplomatic. There was the British diplomat got in touch with the Irish diplomat saying, look, you're going to embarrass our Queen and our Prime Minister because they're not going to be there. And is there any way, you know, that they could step down from this and go to a more formal one at a later point? But Mary McAleese and Bertie Ahern said, no, we're going, and that's that. So it caused an embarrassment for both the Queen and the Prime Minister at the time. So it just showed that again, the peace process and the early stages of it, and how, and this had just happened after the peace process had been declared, the Good Friday Agreement. So it was very, very tenuous and precarious position for Irish diplomats at that stage. Yeah,
and the peace process, obviously, we're paying a lot of attention, and the press rightly have paid a lot of attention to what we're learning about the peace process and what was happening at Stormont, what was happening in London, what was happening in Dublin, both, as you say, in 2003 and in 1993. One of the interesting I found was the perspectives we're getting on the attitudes of some officials to Northern secretaries, and in one case, fears that the Northern secretary might complicate and perhaps compromise the whole thing.
Yeah, that was Peter Mandels. Yeah. The Duke of York, Prince Andrew, Patrick Keelty, who we know from RT, his father had been murdered. The idea was that he Peter Mandelson had only suggested that his father was a member of the IRA, and later, you know, it's been suggested that they tried to recruit the two, Patrick and his brother, to join the IRA and get revenge attack, whatever else. Peter Mandelson had to put his 2 feet in it with Patrick. Anything can be said about him. He's a very impeccable character and would have nothing to do with that kind of sordid interaction with the IRA or anything like that. He was above that, and even his tragic loss of his own father, it must have hit him very hard when Peter Mandelson, the Northern Ireland secretary, not understanding the family situation, yeah. And Prince Andrew said, look, there's not a family in the North that hasn't been affected by the Troubles. So despite their difficulties sometimes with the royalty, he came to the rescue there for Patrick Keelty. Patrick affirmed, look, that wasn't true, and it had nothing to do from the perspective. But unfortunately, again, things like that can be wrong things said at the wrong time, you know, could create a lot of controversy. And that's maybe goes back to how soon should we release these papers? Yeah.
And further confirmation, as if we needed it, of the importance of Mo Mullen to the whole peace process and the work that Mo Mullen was doing, both at the table and perhaps at the coffee table and behind the scenes, to make sure that a deal was achieved and it would work.
Yes, and interesting, one of the snippets I noticed in the State Archive papers was that one of the Irish diplomats got a lift in her private plane, which was hired, it belonged to Christy Borg, the singer, and Mo Mullen's company, whatever, hired it for her use. And the Irish diplomat had to go to something with her, and he was given a lift. And so the problem was, don't pay the ferryman, you know. But anyway, so there, Christy Borg's airplane, private plane, was being used for the peace process. And Mo Mullen, yeah, a great woman. And maybe oftentimes we don't realise, again, we're of a generation, most young people wouldn't know who she was, but the sacrifice she made to bring the peace process there, and her having cancer at the time, and she still was loyal to the six counties, to Ireland and to England, and what she achieved was amazing, absolutely amazing woman. Mm.
Politically at the moment, we're at a point of impasse in terms of the institutions at Stormont. The DUP are having ongoing discussions with the British government. There was some, I think, vague, lingering hope that there might have been some progress before Christmas, and a rather large financial incentive being offered by the Northern Secretary, Chris Heaton-Harris, to try and make that happen. It didn't happen. The talks will continue now into January. Is there anything can be learned by the papers that have been released on both sides over the past week that can be brought into those conversations about the current situation that can perhaps help move it forward?
That's an amazing question, and maybe beyond my abilities to respond to. But yes, I think so. For example, with Charles de Chastelain, you might have remembered him being appointed as to the Independent Commission on Decommissioning. Yeah. And he was getting very frustrated after 3 or 4 years. And he said he'd been talking to the IRA, for example, for six times and nothing had happened. And, the thing we've learned from the peace process, patience is vital. And we saw that rust put an end to the gun, so to speak. And decommissioning did happen, but it didn't happen necessarily at the pace of politics. No. It happened at the pace at which institutions and the IRA and the UVF were willing to progress at. And I think that's very, very important. And I think the other thing, you see, the psychologically, the Irish are very, very different from English in the sense that English, for example, play cricket and they wear white trousers and white jumpers. And the cricket game is strawberry and ice creams and might last 3 days.
And end up a draw.
Yeah. And that's their culture. And it's a wonderful sport in that sense. I don't know much about it. But if you think of the Irish, the equivalent in Ireland is GAA sport, Gaelic football. And we go on and we try to hammer the hell out of each other for an hour as fast as we can. And after an hour, after hammering the hell out of each other, we shake hands and we walk off the field. Our Celtic nature is one where we want it fast and quick, and where we want the resolution right away. That's where maybe the English mind is of a longer game.
Yeah.
And I think that comes through the papers that we've had to learn as a nation that there's a longer game here. And I don't want to be getting into the politics of it, but I think that's what Sinn Féin realised and the IRA realised, that the struggle violently wasn't going to achieve what they wanted to achieve. So then they had to have the long view, the politics of entering into politics and working towards United Ireland. And I think that's what's happening. The unfortunate thing, Donald, and I do genuinely believe that this is something that hasn't happened and should be said, is there has to be a declaration of intent to withdraw. And I think that the English need to be saying, like in Hong Kong, we're going to leave in 50 years, 60 years, 70 years. And so between now and then, you go and work it out. And I think that focuses minds. And that brings us maybe to the realisation, I don't know if you're aware, in the 1970s, because things were getting out of hand, and the British Army had arrived into Northern Ireland, the six counties, the Irish diplomats in 1974, and these papers were released just there a few days ago, to look into various scenarios of the Irish government going into Northern Ireland. And what were they going to do if British were going to withdraw from Northern Ireland? This was a very real concern in 1974, July 1974. And they came up with 3 or 4 different scenarios. And one of them was that two-thirds of Northern Ireland, or the six counties, Belfast, together with almost 500,000 inhabitants, that they would come back into the south. It was called a negotiated repatriation of Northern Ireland. And they reckoned it would cost about the equivalent in today's terms, somewhere between £8 to £9 billion to make this happen. But they felt that the British government mightn't be for it. And then the other one, which was very interesting, was they'd considered military intervention to prevent, if the English withdrew, would the unionists and the former Stormont government try to take control of Northern Ireland, the Protestant population? And civil servants investigated that. And would our army be able to go in, and would they be able to calm matters down militarily? And the report from the government officials said, no, we wouldn't have the capacity militarily to control that situation. And that there was another idea of maybe bringing parts of Fermanagh, Tyrone, Derry, Newry, South Armagh, South Down, about a population of about 300,000, which was 40% of the population of Northern Ireland, into the south. So there was different scenarios there. But it would appear that the reception from the British government would have been relatively poor, but they were planning for it just in case. And people maybe don't realise, if we go back to the 1920s, as part of the Anglo-Irish Agreement, there was to be a border commission, which there was, and Owen McNeill, the great scholar, the scholarly revolution, was on that board, and they published it in 1927, but the Irish government got cold feet. Parts of Derry were to go, massive parts of Derry were to go into the south. We were to lose parts of Raphoe and in around the Protestant-populated areas of Donegal were to go back into the north. So it was to recut the border, not as it is today, and it created too much protest by the Republicans on the Irish side. No, we're not having that. And De Valera. So then that fell apart.
And the other points that have been made about that particular suggestion that a lot of Derry would have come into Donegal, into the Republic, was that the apprentice boys would never, ever give up the idea of losing the walls.
Well, there, that's very, very interesting. And again, that's back to how do we progress this? And this is your question. You know, what have we learned? We've learned that we can't do this without working together and achieving it by understanding and by just being patient. And we've still a long, long way to go. But what I've been saying earlier, and the old maxim of or statement of Neil T. Blaney, the great Neil T., says, you know, there has to be a declaration of intent to withdraw. And I think we'll only have a peace process working properly when we work towards a deadline. And that deadline must be inclusive of all traditions. You know, we're talking about multiculturalism today. Where's our multiculturalism when it comes to the Protestants and the Orange Order and, you know, the Union Jack, all that? We have to face that, and there's no ignoring it. There is a tradition on our island that would not necessarily be of the tradition I've grown up on. And so how do I respect that? I'm willing to respect every other religion and every other immigrant that comes into the country and not be willing to accept the people that have been here for 400 years.
You were speaking about patience, though. I mean, the reality is that in a discussion, you're not talking years, you're talking decades, realistically.
Yeah, absolutely decades. But it has to be done in a very coherent and thought-out way. And again, look, you've had brilliant conversations about this on Highland Radio because we straddled the border. But, you know, it has to be an inclusive conversation that engages everybody and that everybody feels part of it. And, you know, we've so much more in common that we have in difference. I've said it before, for example, when it comes to the Battle of the Boyne, you know, it wasn't necessarily Catholic and Protestant. Catholic soldiers fought with King William, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah.
And the Pope actually said Mass for when King William won. Mm-hmm. He was delighted because it meant that it would keep the French down.
Yeah.
It was politics.
It was international geopolitics, yeah. And it was a lot more to it. We know, for instance, recently, in the middle of last year, I still haven't got used to saying last year yet, but in the middle of 2023, we saw the coronation of Charles III, whom you don't hold in the same esteem that you held his mother. I think you've made that quite clear. But at that coronation, there were several guests from the Republic went. There were several attendees. The Taoiseach was there, the Justice Minister was there. There were others there from the Republic. When the royal wedding between Prince Charles and the then Lady Diana Spencer took place, President Patrick Hillary was invited, but declined.
you're landing me in it. That's true. There was papers that showed that there was reference to the wedding of Prince Charles and Princess Diana in 1981. And they had a deadline. It was July 29th. He was getting married and they had a deadline to reply or EP by the 26th. And he didn't want to go because the time was very difficult. Bobby Sands was just after dying the previous month on hunger strike. And the hunger strikes were very much to the fore. And the relationships, the Anglo-Irish relationships, were very, very poor. So President Hillary didn't want to go. He said, look, this isn't a good symbol for me to go as head of the Free State as opposed to Ella Eyre and all Ireland to go to this wedding. It wouldn't, I don't think it's politically correct. And they felt that this would create a little bit of international crisis in one way. And so he didn't know what to do. And it was decided that he would eventually send a letter saying, look, that he had other prior engagements and that they sent an Irish diplomat. Now, that's come a long way from Michelle O'Neill, for example, sitting in the coronation, hearing the... I just wonder, had Bobby Sands been alive in the hunger strikers, what they would have thought, you know,
Yeah.
When Irish Taoiseach and Sinn Féin head in Northern Ireland were sitting in the coronation on top of an Irish stone that was stolen, by the way, from Donegal, the Lia File. Mm. That's what he's crowned on, by the way. The scone stolen is a stone. But anyway, that goes back to the Dana. But you would wonder what the hunger strikers and those men and women of the Troubles in the 80s would have thought of that. It's come a long way.
It does show where we have come. And I mean, I had a conversation. I have two children in their, shall we say, very, 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 very late 20s. And, you know, I often speak to them about what the situation used to be like. And they kind of, they have a vague knowledge of it because they did it in history in school a bit. But not quite as much as I thought they might have done. And, you know, it's amazing, you know, and I was trying to, I tried to explain once what Section 31 was, and they were going, what? But what do you mean? How could you do that? They just couldn't get their heads around Section 31. The reality is, for the first, I'd say the first 5-6 years of Highland Radio's existence, we were under Section 31. I often said, for instance, the late great Eddie Fullerton. I never got to interview him. I mean, I've attended several council meetings at which he was, and I spoke to the man several times and attended the council meetings when he spoke. And it was one of my regrets that I was never able to record and put Eddie Fullerton on air. And even those days, I mean, you know, you go back, we're now talking about the very real prospect of within 18 months having a Sinn Féin Taoiseach. When I first sat in this room and read news bulletins, I couldn't even interview a member of Sinn Féin on the radio.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember there'd be a voiceover for Gerry Adams. But like, I don't necessarily bring it into the present. But I think we're back in the same place now with cancel culture and the hate speech law. 75% of the people of Ireland do not want this hate speech law. That's according to the reports that have been done on this, you know, finding out what people feel about this. And yet our Irish government is going ahead with it. And Sinn Féin are backing it. And this was the very same kind of law that was used against Sinn Féin when they needed to speak. And they did need to speak. And they did need to speak at that time. And they did need to be heard at that time. And by ignoring them and not listening to them during the Troubles, I think prolonged the Troubles. We have to be willing to listen to our adversaries. And because if we shut them down and silence them and cancel them, it only creates a subculture, and that's not healthy. And the beautiful thing about independent radio is people are able to speak, whether you agree or disagree. Speak and express your mind. And you know what? If you've said something wrong, then you can be corrected, and you can learn, and you can apologise, and you can move on. That's how we grow. That's how we mature. And I'm a teacher, and my children do not come into my class pre-programmed with all the right answers. And they need to have the freedom to say the mad things in my class that sometimes are way off the Richter scale and historical tense and stuff like that. But I give them that space, and then it provides me with the opportunity then to show the facts and to redirect them. And it's only by that kind of method that you can learn and you can grow. And here we're back now in the present day. You're talking about Section 31. We've moved on into the present day where we have the hate speech laws, which are closing people down. And what'll be interesting to see in 20, 30 years' time when the government papers are released, what TikTok's government have down, what things that, you know, that's alive now in the government will be revealed, and we're going, oh, wow. Weren't we so naive not to know?
I suppose the big difference between those Section 31 and the hate speech laws is the hate speech laws is concentrating on what is being said. Section 31 was concentrated effectively on who was doing the saying, and that's the big difference between the two.
Yeah, but I don't think you could exchange there's a thin line between what, for example, Gerry Adams was saying and what, you know, the Sinn Féin were doing. And I mean, he needed to be heard. What he was saying was terribly, terribly important. And, you know, it's a wee bit like, again, bring it into modern times, Putin has been saying, but nobody's listening. Yeah. And if you don't listen, then you won't find compromise. And I hear what you're saying, and again, look, there's no way I would tolerate hate speech by any means. And I think we have legal instruments to deal with that. Whether you're one position or another, whether you're black, you're white, whether you're gay or straight, it's irrelevant. Every human being deserves the same dignity. And if you treat a human being with disrespect, then you deserve the full rigors of the law, full stop. And so I think we can agree on that.
Mm. One question's come in from a listener, and I'm going to end it on this one, because as always, whenever you and I get chatting, I go off on tangents, you go off on tangents, and before we know where we are, we're in a completely different place to where we expected to be. But it's been a really, really interesting journey getting there, and it's always fascinating. You mentioned earlier about a declaration of intent, And another caller rang in to say that the late Neil T. Blaney said the same thing, and indeed you made it clear you were quoting him. Caller says, ask Joe Kelly, what are the opportunities for becoming a nation once again? Is there enough being done between all parties to discuss things like health, education, security, stuff like that? Because, I mean, there's and we've seen how difficult Brexit was. I mean, Brexit will be nothing compared to the discussion that would actually involve United Ireland in terms of just bringing health systems and education systems together. I mean, I'm sure there's an awful lot of people north of the border are looking at the NHS and then looking at our health system and thinking to themselves, do I really want that?
Yeah. Oh, look, there has been conversations, and in fairness to our government, you know, people have been very critical at times of our government, including myself, maybe, but they have done great things, both Fine Gael, both Fianna Fáil, and other parties for that matter. There have been various invitations, for example, and Dáil deputations where they've had conversations. For example, they've taken in German diplomats that had worked on the reunification of Germany. If you go back to 1989, and there's so many insights, and where their idea was, don't be worried about the money. It's about the processes and about the procedures you put in place. And look, that conversation is happening and does have to be had. Just a simple thing. Our Garda Síochána are unarmed. The PSNI are armed. How do you merit that? Our education system. You mentioned the health system. There's a lot of stuff we can get right. But, you know, you have to have faith in ourselves and in our own ability. And there will have to be sacrifices and efforts made. And that's happening. But as we talked about earlier, this isn't going to happen overnight. And like, I'm a Republican. I would love United Ireland. But I don't want a United Ireland that's a half United Ireland in the sense that not thought out properly, not progressed properly, not integrated properly. And that's going to take time. And we're going to have to be bigger than understanding. There's a lot of people that are maybe geographical Republicans. They just want a 32-county Ireland and that's it. But as you know and I know, it's more than just a geographical republic. It has to be something that's very inclusive, thought out, and engages all elements of society, health, policing, education, everything to do with society. Yeah. And you know what's very, very interesting? What I think will be very interesting now, at the moment in the six counties, 7% are non-nationals. 7% of the population of Northern Ireland are non-nationals. So if it came to a referendum, that 7% becomes 14% one way or the other. So it might very well be the case that it's non-nationals that will decide the future of the six counties with regard to the 26 counties. I don't know, but I just find that an interesting figure, and that figure is increasing every year.
It's an interesting point to finish on. Dr. Joe Kelly, it's always fascinating to have these conversations, and thanks as always for your perspective and for your input. Joe, Happy New Year to you and yours, and thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, no, I give a league.
Slán.